So we're out at Notre Dame, and Yastrzemski's taking batting practice. I'm in the end zone, running to feel the balls that he's sending up. And all of a sudden, he gets into one, and I can see it's going to hit the football players. But they got their backs, and they got the helmets on, their shoulder pants and everything. And all of a sudden, I start yelling, heads up, heads up, heads up. And I'm running, and I'm laughing. They can't hear me. The ball comes down, hits off the fullback's shoulder pads, bounces up, hits the quarterback back of the head, and the ball falls right down. The coach is standing there, and the coach is, like, infuriated, you know. Now, home plate's here, and here's the outfield right here. Like, here's the right field foul line, and then the football field. And so this is Notre Dame football season, all right?
Was it Precision by any chance?
No. But it's actually better. So what happens is this is the backfield coach. It's not the head coach. It's the backfield coach, all right? So the ball came down and hit a guy by the name of Nick Petrosani, who's all pro, played with the quarterback was a fellow by the name of George Izzo, all right, who played.
He played for the Redskins.
Redskins and the Cardinals, all right? And then the other guy was a fellow by the name of Norm Odinek, who became a doctor, and Jimmy Just, a successful businessman. And I get down there, and I'm laughing. And I get the ball from the coach. The coach says, "What? Get that kid out of there." I'm going, "What's he talking about?" He's mad, you know? And I'm saying, "There's a kid here in the end zone getting fungos to the outfielders over here." And I took the coach, and the coach was a little small, and I said, "Coach, not this kid here." I said, "You see way down there, that little cage in there, the kid in there hit that ball." And he goes, "What the hell is he doing here?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "He just turned down $100,000. The whole backfield at that time said, "Is that Yastrzemski? Is that Yastrzemski?" I said, "That's Yastrzemski. The coach, Hank Stram."
Oh, the backfield coach.
The backfield coach at that time, Hank Stram, went on to become Hall of Fame in
Kansas City. Right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the end of the what happened at the end of the 1971 season with Milwaukee?
Well, after Milwaukee, I went to spring training with Atlanta as a non-roster player.
By the way, was Hank Aaron on that team?
Yes.
Milwaukee and Eddie Matthews?
No, not at Milwaukee. But when I went to spring training with Atlanta, Hank...
Oh, they had already moved.
They had moved.
Okay.
And they were all down, you know, Orlando Cepeda, Joe Torre...
Warren Spahn still there?
Not that... The year before he was there, I know the story about Spahn and then, but that was back... I don't know what year that was.
72 is, it was the next, after Milwaukee was 72.
Right. So well, anyway, in 72 what happened was I went to spring training with the Braves, pitching a couple games. Bob Watson, Darrell Evans made an error where I would have been out of the inning, and then Watson came up. It was against Houston in Cocoa Beach, and he hit a home run. The next day, Paul Richards came down and said, you know, we were out in the field, and he drove around in the golf cart, and he came up to me and says, "So we're going to send you to Richmond, but we'll give you the same deal we gave Luis Tion, you know, the year before. It's basically, if anybody's interested in you, we won't hold back. We'll let them, you know, take you and so forth." And I said, "No, I'm not going to do that." I just came down here. If I could make this club, I make it. If I can't, I said, you know, I had three little kids at the time. I had a good job on Wall Street. I said, "No." Well, actually here in Washington, but it was brokerage. And I said, "No, that's it." And so I went in, I packed my bags, and all of a sudden, as I'm packing the bags, somebody hits me in the back, and I turn around, and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "So," I said, "they want to give me the deal I gave to you last year. They want to go over to the minor league camp." I said, "But I'm packing it in." And he says, "Well, good luck to you." He says, "Sorry," and I says, "Good luck to you, Hank Aaron."
Oh, okay.
So that's how I ended my career.
Right. Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, okay, so tell us about this job with Wall Street or brokerage. You were doing this
in the off season. I would do it in the off season. Basically, back then,
and
this is not disparaging the current players, you know, it was just a different time. Back then, you know, you had to work in the off season to support your family. And I had been fortunate enough to you know, get a good education, and then I got my master's degree in finance and investments at NYU. And so it was logical I'd try to get a job on Wall Street. And basically at first they all wanted me, then they found out I was still playing ball, so they sort of backed away a little bit. But then finally I got a job with a company by the name of Goodbody and Company at the time. And
this was in the Washington area?
No, it was in Wall Street.
Oh, in New York.
And I worked right on 2 Broadway and 55 Broad, and I worked on initially to put in municipal syndicate deals together. And then, you know, and I was just, I wasn't putting, I was working in that area with them. And then I worked on actually they gave me a little, what they call tax swapping trading desk 1 year, I ran that. And then the next thing, the following year, I worked on what they call stock block equity, stock trading, institutional trading desk. And then by this time, I sort of had a good idea that I, now, one thing I should mention about that, when I was going through graduate school, a guy by the name of Larry Ritter, you know who Larry Ritter is?
Yeah, Larry Ritter, he wrote
The Glory of the Times.
Right, and he was the first one really to get into oral history.
So right,
that
right.
Was recorded.
Right.
And he was a Sabre member.
All right, yeah, well.
Of course, he passed away a few years ago.
Yeah, I know. Well, right. I'll tell you about Larry Ritter. I go into NYU, and I'm going up in the elevator, and all of a sudden, the elevator, I'm waiting for an elevator, the doors were closing, and all of a sudden the doors open, and the guy's holding it like this, and it's Larry Ritter. And he says, "Are you Hannon?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "I want to see you." He said, where are you going now?" I said, "I got a class." He says, "Well, I'm Professor Ritter." He said, "I'm head of the finance department." He says, "My room's up in 306 or something." He says, "When you after your class, you got time?" And I said, "Sure." He says, "Come up, I want to see you." So I came up, and I said to him, "Professor Ritter, you want to see me?" And he says, "Yeah." And he sat me down. He says, "You know," he says, "this summer," he says, "you know, I'm a big baseball fan." He said, "You know," he was a pitcher in college, Larry. And he said, "I'm watching the Yankee game, and all of a sudden they say this, coming into pitch, Jim Hannon, and he's in the offseason, he goes to NYU. And he says, "Oh, NYU must go downtown, you know." And he says, "Oh, he's going to graduate school." And he says, "He's not going to graduate school. Who's this kid? This guy's a fraud. You know, there's no picture in my graduate school, you know." And then he says, then the next thing, he says, "He's in the finance department." He says, "He's in my department." He's telling me this, you know. He says, "I called my secretary right away," and I call up, and she was in the office. I says, "Look up this thing. This guy here is saying this is a fraud, and I'm gonna get this guy." And he says, "Well, what's his name?" He says, "It says Hannon." And she said, "James." And he says, "Oh yeah, he's in your department." He says, "So now you're gonna have to write a thesis." He says, "So I'm gonna be your advisor." So I had the head of the department be my advisor. Fast forward now. First, what he done is I have to write a thesis, so I write on the pension plan, Major League Pension Plan. What happens is you have to write a chapter.
You're doing this in the mid '60s, right?
Right.
So, okay.
And so what happens is. Larry says to me, you know, you have to, each chapter has to sort of cover a subject area. One is like a corporate structure. Next one is on accounting. Next one's on history. Next one's on statistics. All the courses, basic courses. Next one's on investments and so forth. So got to one where the statistics, and I said, "What am I going to do with that?" And he grabbed the baseball, paper-bound baseball register, all right? Took it, and he says, and he threw it to me, and I said, "What's this?" He says, "Go figure it out." You know, now the pension plan, what I had to do, what they call random sampling. You take a sample, to see, and it, what it came down to, what's the average career length of a major league ball player? Well, I found out, using statistics and the random sampling of the book, where I used two tables twice to get into technology, so, but basically I find what the page was to a random number, and then I go down to pick, count the number on that page, and then I use random numbers, and then I pick that name. The last name I picked, I remember, Mellott, all right? And I took those, and I put it, and I came up with, like, I don't know, it was 4.1, 4.2 years was the average career length. Now go fast forward. Marvin Miller comes on the scene. Marvin Miller hears about my thesis. Marvin Miller asked if he could have a copy of my thesis, and I said, sure. So I get a, make a copy from my, give it to Marvin Miller. Marvin Miller reads the thesis, all right? Marvin Miller supposedly kept that on his desk for several years. We're in negotiation. Now I'm in the, I guess it's 69, I think it was. I'm on the pension committee, all right? And as a player rep, representing the players for negotiations and collective bargaining. And we're in a collective bargaining thing, and we had, it was the guy's name, Pete Garrett, I guess was the name at the time, and it had Lee McPhail and Joe Cronin, the representing the owners, and it's myself and Jim Bunning and Marvin Miller. And we're in negotiations, and we went on for 2 weeks, and all you just kept hearing was, well, the pension plan is so great, why don't, you know, and so finally, after 2 weeks, and Marvin was in meetings, he would always talk very low like this, and he'd do it intentionally, you know, so you would sort of have to, everybody had to lean to listen to him, but that was his style, you know, to get people's attention. Well, the long and short of it was that we're in the, he says, we've been hearing for 2 weeks how great the plan is. He says, how great can the plan be when also what, since it was 4.1 year, the vesting requirement was 5 years, 70% of the players never qualified. He says, how good can the plan be when, you know, and the number was a little different, like he said 68.2%, and I'm going, oh my God, does he know how I did that? Because now I know where it's coming from. It's coming from my thesis. But I didn't know Marvin at the time. Marvin was smarter than that. He saw that and he said, I wonder if this is true. So he went and had the actuaries actually run the numbers, and the numbers were a little bit different, but it turned out, so the owners said, well, the representative said, well, can we step outside and have a caucus? So they went out, and they were out for like 10 minutes. They came back in. They said, well, this has all come to news to us. We'd like to see the, you know, the study that you've done, the actuary study, and see, and bring it back to ownership. And we said, fine. They went to owner, and we were going to have the first strike. That would have been the first strike in baseball. In fact, Lee McPhail was down here in Washington, and we were at a dinner, and we were up in one of these VIP things, and he came up to me and asked me, he says, are you guys serious? Will you strike? And I said, we will strike. I said, don't test it, I said. So they came back, and they said, we looked at your numbers, you're right. He says, we're going to make it 50-50, so 50% of the players. And we said, fine. And that was it, and we averted the strike. And it was from the thesis and Marvin reading it that it happened.
Well, you got an historic place in that. Yeah. Very good. Just two things. When you were playing, can you tell me what your largest highest salary was?
26.5.
Okay. And also you said you had a Warren Spahn story.
Yeah. Well, basically what it was, I was in spring training, and I had to, it was late in spring training, and they're trying to decide who's going to make the club and who wasn't. And I'm going to say this is about 67, maybe. And I had to pitch against the Braves up in West Palm Beach. And the guy that I had to pitch against was Warren Spahn. On that club, when you think about it, Eddie Matthews, Hank Aaron, Orlando Cepeda, Joe Torre. I mean, it was just like, you know, a Hall of Fame roster. You're saying that Smarty was pitching, you know? And I'm saying, and the irony of that night was that I beat them 3-1. I went 7 innings. Aaron hit a shot, but the wind was blowing in like 50 miles an hour, and it went up and it came straight down the outfield, was going like this, and all of a sudden he saw it coming back down. He caught it right up against the wall because the wind held it up, all right? But Spani got a double off me. And he drove in a run. So the guy, of all those great hitters, Cepeda, Torre, Aaron, Matthews, and who hurt me? Spani.
Good. All right. Now, tell me how you got involved with the Baseball Players Alumni Association.
Well, basically, it actually, initially, the idea started, I had a neighbor right over here, a guy by the name of Bob Hunter, who had was in the Air Force, had been, and went on to become a chief information officer for Eastern Airlines and for Instel and so forth. But he said, you know, you guys ought to have, he wanted a sports association, you know, and so he sort of put that idea in my mind. But I said, no, nah, I'm not a, and he would work with the Air Force Association, you know, and he knew all about that, and I said, no, that's not me. But then what happened was NFL alumni had a big, the Redskins had a big alumni group here, and they were very successful.
They usually were with the Touchdown Club,
right? And so what happened was they had golf tournaments, and they would have golf tournaments around the country, and then they would have their Super Bowl golf down in I don't know if it was Myrtle Beach or I think it was Myrtle Beach, and well, they always, the team that won wanted to, you know, win the whole thing, and the team that won it in this area here, one of the guys got hurt, so they looked for a ringer, and Chuck Hinton, who was a good golfer besides being a good baseball player.
I got to tell you, if there's a Chuck Hinton story.
All right, and so what happened is Hinton. They picked him up, and they went down, and they won their the Super Bowl golf. Well, Hinton came back, and he said, why don't we have an alumni association like the football players? So he started contacting everybody, and he contacted, we went over to do a, over here in Alexandria, they had the Alexandria Dukes, was the name of the minor league club.
Barry Bonds played for them one year.
Is that right?
Yeah, in the minor, yeah.
And we went over there, and in fact, Fella came down to do it on the same promotion night, and Hinton said, why don't we start our own association? Well, having Fella over here, Bob Hunter, had suggested to me, I was sort of, been thinking about it a couple of years, but I really didn't want to do it. Now all of a sudden the players, and so we said, well, let's look into it. So Hinton set up meetings for like about 2 months, and we invited, you know, we had Walt Masterson, Jim Lemon, Dick Bosman, Frank Crawford, Don Lyon, Tommy Brown, who's played a little bit of the centers, but more known for football.
Yeah, right. You know, Packers.
The Packers. And so we formed it, and where we formed it, and we went to NFL alumni meetings, right, to see, and they gave us their book, you know, to show what to do and so forth, and we formed it in the Touchdown Club in 82. And because I was a broker and I was always near the phone, I became the founding president, all right? And so at that time, Bowie Kuhn was the commissioner of baseball, and so and the Cracker Jack game was starting at that time, and we got involved with the Cracker Jack game. So I was sort of constantly getting calls, you know, between, because baseball didn't know what this Cracker Jack game was. It was going to hurt the game or help the game and so forth. And then we decided we wanted to establish it. So I was appointed spokesman, and we went up to, we were going to contact all the owners. Well, then Edward Bennett Williams, who who had owned the Redskins, had just bought the Baltimore Orioles, but he was a lawyer here in Washington. So we decided to approach him first. And we went up, and it was Brooks Robinson, myself. We had to go up the road to get some more ball players, because a lot of the players that played for the Senators had moved out of town. There hadn't been a club here in years. So we went up and got the Orioles. Dick Hall, Billy Hunter, a fellow by the name of Joe Durham, Brooks, and they came down, and we went over and we met with Edward Ben and Williams, and so we went into the meeting and we asked for money, and we said we wanted seed money, just one time up front, and then we would be self-sufficient, but we needed something to get started. And he said, well, you don't want to, he says, you're coming to the wrong place. And I said, oh, you know, I'm just sitting here. And he says, but, and at that time he was pretty powerful. He was head of the executive committee of Major League Baseball. He says, where you want to go is the commissioner's office. That's where the money is, in the central fund. He said, why don't we, he said, would you like me to set up a meeting? And I said, love it. And he says, and I think the presidents of both leagues should be there too. So we set up a meeting, and he asked who was going and so forth, and we told him, and I'm trying to think of the, I feel embarrassed about this. The guy that was an announcer, was former pitcher with the
Jim Palmer.
No, before that. Older pitcher, he was from New York. He played with the, I'm saying Rex Sparney, not Rex Sparney.
Not Ralph Wright.
No. Oh, I'll get the name in a little bit. Anyway, he said he should go too. So we went up and made a pitch to the commissioner, and they made us revise a budget, and then we got. We got initial funding from the commissioner's office. That's how we started.
How much was it?
It was $25,000. We got in increments of $12,500, I guess.
Now, are the ball players automatically in this when they retire?
No. Basically, the way it works is you have to pay for membership. All right, it's a paid membership, and one of the things we learned. When we went to the NFL alumni, they had a hard time getting current players when they retired to join the alumni. Having gone through it, I realized, and a couple of us realized, that there's like a psychological thing. You don't want to be thinking as an old timer when you're only out a year or two. So what we said is, well, why not? And there's a group called the National Association of Professional Baseball Players. Chuck Stevens used to be head of that group. And basically what they did is they made you pay dues while you were an active player. And I said, why don't we do that same thing, get all the current players and get them involved now. You know, in the off season they get involved in events, or maybe even during the season they got an off day, they want to go play golf or something. I said, and that way, they won't have the psychological barrier where they think they're alumni. So that's what we have done. And we've got almost all the current players now are alumni.
And you're certainly, I would make it self-sufficient financially.
Yeah, right.
Great.
Yeah, and so what we've done is we've got the current, the former players and the current players. Now, the other issues that came up was we were a nonprofit to promote the game, re-involve the, former player back in the community, and let him, reestablish himself, basically. But the thing that we found out is, what's in it for me started coming into play a lot. So we had to form two for-profit. One's in marketing, which we call Major League Alumni Marketing, and the other is what we call Major League Alumni Services, which were, this most recent thing was the pension issue within pre-1980 players. We've got them, it's not a pension, but they're getting, up to $10,000 a year, depending on how much service they had in lieu of a pension.
Are you still active in it?
Very active.
And are you still the president?
Chairman of the board.
Chairman of the board. Looking better. Who is president now?
Brooks.
Brooks, okay.
Yeah. I was founding president. Jim Cott was succeeded me, and then Brooks succeeded Brooks. I succeeded Jim Cott, and so that's only been three presidents.
It's been about 40 years old?
82. So it'll be 30 next year.
Oh, 30, 82. Good, that's great. Okay, well, it's certainly a worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah, oh, it really has been. What it's done is a lot of the players, you know, you knew players that you played against, but you were, they were the enemy. Mm-hmm. Now, they're no longer the enemy. I did a thing on the Nationals at a clinic a couple of weeks ago. Well, it wasn't actually a clinic. It was sort of a religious thing. It was a priest in my parish here. He asked me to go. I had a thing called Catholics for Christ. And basically, he went and said a mass, and he asked me if I want to come along. I said, sure. So we went over to the Nationals ballpark, and they have a chapel there. And but they said, let's go over to the visiting clubhouse, and the Phillies were in town. So,
and they're fans.
Yeah, and they're fans.
Nasty fans.
So I went in, and we went in, and we looked at, you know, they did their thing. You know, let make sure everybody knew there was, if they wanted to go to mass, they could, and so forth. As I started to walk out, I looked, I saw there's a corridor down, there's like a couple of them, and then at the end, I saw the office, and it was the manager's office. Now, both Davey Johnson and Charlie Manuel are my contemporaries. I played against both of them, right? So I said, I'm going to have some. So I went down, I walked down the hallway, and I got in, and Charlie Manuel's in the office all by himself. And he's got his uniform on, except he's just got his red sleeve shirt. He don't have his outer shirt on, you know. And he's reading some kind of, I don't know, scouting report or something, you know. And I knock on the door and I go, Skip. He scared him, you know. And I came up and I introduced, I said, Jim Hannon. I said, the former Washington Senate. And he says, hey, John, Charlie's a great guy. And he jumps up and he says, I remember you. Fastballs in here, sliders down here. Yes, fastballs here, sliders. That's where you threw me all the time. I remember you.
Is that true?
Yeah. And he says, well, you live around here? And he comes from Southern Virginia. He grew up in Southern Virginia, by West Virginia, all right? And he's got a Southern accent, and I'm from Jersey, you know? And he says, I said, yeah. And I said, I looked at him and I said, yeah. I'm from Northern Virginia, not Southern Virginia. And he says, oh, I moved to Florida. He says, I moved to Florida.
Good story. Right. All right, well, anyway, I want to thank you. We've got some wonderful stories there, yeah. Your experiences. You really, you know, for, I guess you're average, you were an average pitcher.
Right.
But your stories are wonderful, you know.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate.
Had above average experiences.
Yeah, I've had a lot of, but because I've been involved as, you know, a player rep, and I've been involved with the Alumni Association, and I've, and plus, I think I saw 250-something players come through Washington, you know, so you get to know a lot of players,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then, and I go to, you know, a lot of these dinners and old-timer games and so forth. And even though we'll put on golf tournaments, and originally we just thought all we did was golf tournaments, you know.
Raise you play money. Golf?
No, I'm not really a golfer. So that was sort of a downer a little bit. And there, but it's funny how a lot of guys, you know, a lot of ball players love golf. You know, they love golf.
Yeah,
they're good
their
golfers.
Days off, they go play golf.
Golf, right? So, we still do about 40 golf tournaments, I think, and we'll do 57 clinics, and we do a couple other things like old timers games, legend games, and so we got that Father's Day game up at the Hall of Fame and so forth.
Right. Well, I really want to thank you very much, and I'm sure the members in the Hall of Fame will appreciate these comments.
Yeah. Yeah, anytime. I enjoyed it. And, you can tell I could talk forever.
That's a great story.